Counter's counting.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
You've got your mise en place.
The what?
The je what? Solis, je sanguinis. Birthright citizenship on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of Liberty Nation. This is Scott Cosenza, and I'm joined in studio today by Tim Donner. Tim?
Coming at you.
I was trying to remember your title. You know, we go through the radio show.
You want me to start singing or something?
I have a dozen titles.
You have something you'd like to sing for us?
I have a dozen titles that you go through on the radio show. And I've forgotten what your, you know, chief cook and bottle washer.
I don't have
I've forgotten
a title.
What your actual, okay. You're national correspondent, aren't you, or something like that?
I describe, my job description is I'm a WIT specialist, okay. Which is whatever it takes.
There you go. And Archie, the dog, is here as well, and he is good at being a dog.
It's your animal, companion.
He excels at being a dog.
Animal companion.
All right. A little housekeeping first. I've gotten all the responses about the hat. It's not yet available on special order, but I will update when it is appropriate. Just let me know your interest, and I'll keep you on the list.
They're stampeding at the door for that, you know.
So
you do know that, don't you?
We're going to talk about birthright citizenship and a little bit on the elections. And I have a clip on some media manipulation and gun control, which we may or may not get to. So just because birthright, I think, may be a longer and more involved discussion, and because I know you have ants in your pants, Tim, to play some clip relevant to our discussion on the elections, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I admit it's kind of a guilty pleasure.
All right.
Because Hillary Clinton, anytime she opens her mouth, there's so much that you can say.
Archie's upset, the mention of her name brings a lot of
anxiety. He's getting restless.
You know,
he's going to start barking out loud very soon.
All right,
well, look, you can't start any discussion about an election without finding a link between 2016 and 18, right?
Uh-huh.
And the link is Hillary Clinton, who incredibly this week said that, you know what? Let me just play it for you.
All right.
And we can process it then.
Do you want to run again?
No.
Wait.
No.
That was a pause.
Well, I'd like to be president.
Okay.
Work would be work that I feel very well prepared for, having been in the Senate for 8 years, having been a diplomat in the State Department. And it's just going to be a lot of heavy lifting.
So are you going to be doing any of that lifting? Do you feel like?
Oh, I have no idea, Kara, but I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to even think about it until we get through this November 6th election about what's going to happen after that.
She won't rule it out. Won't rule out running in 2020. In fact, says that depending on the outcome of the midterms, she just might dive in again. She is, Scott. Somebody put it this way. It was actually in the Daily Beast. And I wrote about it this week in a piece on LibertyNation.com entitled Hillary, the thing that wouldn't leave. Do you remember that skit from Saturday Night Live where the guy comes over and you just have him over for dinner and then, you know, you turn in, you know, you basically leaves at 9:30, but he never leaves. And the woman shrieks throughout the entire diatribe he goes into saying, so he says something like, The hosts say, you know, we're really tired and we've really enjoyed your company, but we really have to get up early. And John Belushi responds by saying, I think I'll call some friends up and invite them over here to watch a movie. And then you hear the woman go, It's a beautiful thing, Scott. The thing that wouldn't leave. So Hillary Clinton, very much in play for 2020. She's like, as I wrote in the Liberty Nation, it was actually a quote from the Daily Beast of all places, which says, Hillary's like a Halloween ghoul who rises up to terrorize the American public.
The best cartoon I saw for Halloween was a picture of it was Hillary and at a door and with some candy, you know, and like a couple giving out the candy. And they said, that one won't leave. And it said, well, nice touch, meaning, of course, that's part of the completing the Hillary costume. I think that you're wrong on your analysis. I think the right analysis.
There's a first time for everything, Scott.
This, Tim, is Hillary signaling to those in the FBI and the various U.S. attorney's offices around the country, now is not the time to turn your back on the Clintons, okay? We're not fair game for you yet.
Sure. Because if I run again, surely I'll beat Donald Trump. People will regret their votes, and they'll come stampeding over to the Clinton side.
I was watching, as one does, some old Christopher Hitchens videos on YouTube this week.
Because you parse the word one as one does.
Yeah, as a person, you know, who's engaged in the world and appreciates the brilliance that is Mr. Hitchens.
Or was.
His brilliance still exists. His person no longer does. And he was talking about, in the run-up to her then-Senate election, about Hillary Clinton. He said, what has this woman done? She's been the chief apologist for this horrible person, and besides that, has basically done nothing. And I think about it today, and I think, you know, what has her great accomplishments been that she should be given the presidency of the United States? Been the worst, most corrupt candidate in history?
Her accomplishment is clear. You know? She handed the keys to the kingdom over to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's her accomplishment,
well, thank
Scott.
You for that, yeah. Yeah.
See, now, 2018, we've got the midterms coming up on Tuesday, and Donald Trump has reduced the choice available to voters down to a very simple one.
The choice could not be more clear. Democrats produce mobs. Republicans produce jobs.
Okay. Simple message. Will it hit home?
The Republicans need the mobs to fill the jobs. That's the problem, Tim.
That's, well, a nice turn of phrase,
thank you
actually.
Much.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into birthright citizenship as a separate topic in a minute here. But before we do, just the raw politics of it, Tim. So Donald Trump announced that he's going to pursue changing birthright citizenship, which is the rule that if you're born here, you get to stay here as a citizen. The idea being that there are these anchor babies and these Central Americans who are coming up, and this will deter them. Is this a win for Republicans, or?
I think it's got to be. It's got to put the wind at their back, honestly, because really the migrant caravan, I think, is still the enduring image.
That's a bigger story for looming on the election.
Yes, because
right, well, then let's just talk about birthright citizenship later. Then tell me what in the past we haven't podcasted together in 2 weeks. In the 2 weeks since we last did the uprising, is that the biggest driving force, if there is one, to the polls or away from them, depending on your...
I think it has replaced the Brett Kavanaugh hearing as the animating issue for Republican voters.
Okay.
Because it's a reality. They see it on their TV screens. They see this growing mass of people.
The horde coming for them every day.
The horde headed for the border. Now we hear talk that there's a second or maybe even a third caravan. Now look, these caravans have existed for a long time.
Yeah.
But this one is particularly large and seems to be particularly well organized. Now, whether they can make it all the way to the border, I don't know. But I think this is, I mean, it just common sense tells you this is a frightening prospect for the American people. And it can only help the Republicans. I mean, there's no way that the Democrats can get out there and make an argument that these people being let in, thousands of them that we know nothing about, with criminals likely to be among them. I mean, even people on the left, they use statements like, Jorge Ramos used this last week. He said, well, look, not all of them are criminals. Not all of them have been deported, which, coming from Jorge Ramos, is a tacit admission that there are criminals. There are people who've been deported among them.
There's thousands of people.
Yeah.
It's impossible that there aren't a large variety. There's probably
Right.
Surgeons, too. I mean, there's probably all sorts of people in the thousands and thousands of people.
Surgeons?
Well, all right. In Honduras, I was surgeon.
We could use more surgeons,
All right. Well.
But no, I think it's a winning issue for Republicans. Whether it means they win the House or not, I don't know. I think they're clearly going to win the Senate unless we're shocked beyond
comprehension. Unless these ads, Tim, really sway people's choices. And with that in mind, there's two ads that I want to play. And the first one I just think is funny because we've talked before about Barbara Comstock. Barbara Comstock is my congresswoman.
And mine.
And yours.
10th District of Virginia.
Right. And she is not a lockstep Donald Trump supporter. She
to
has
say the
tried
least.
In many ways, in many times, to distance herself from
Correct.
Donald Trump while not actively, she doesn't want to spurn Trump voters away by like, kicking sand in their faces, but at the same time, she doesn't go to White House events. She doesn't stand next to Trump. You don't see her. Trump hasn't, it's a 15-minute ride. He drives through the district to get to his golf course, which is in the district.
It's true.
And you don't see her or, you know, anything about her. So this is an ad by her opponent. We played the clip a couple episodes ago about Jennifer Wexler. What is it?
I don't even know now.
Wexler?
Oh, no, you got it wrong again. Wexton. Wow, it's a mental block.
Yeah. So this was the person whose staffer didn't know that impeachment originated in the House. So in any case,
yes.
This is an ad run in favor of Wexton. It's Wexton.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. You
in
got
favor
it right
of Wexton against Comstock. And I just think it's hilarious because of all the things that Barbara would not want, she just can't, as you talked about, right? What did you say? She can't win for losing on this, right? Because the Republicans who actually support Donald Trump, who may be motivated to come out and vote for a congressional candidate to advance his agenda, can't rely on Comstock to be that congressperson.
That's right.
And at the same time, then she's getting penalized for being in lockstep with Trump.
Exactly. So she's getting it from both ends.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Comstock isn't the person we thought. She's voted with Trump 97.8% of the time, including the Trump tax plan that gives almost all the benefits to the richest 1%. She's not who we need in Congress anymore.
Anymore. They said that anymore mean that she was fine up till now, but we don't need her anymore this
time. That's a perfect analysis because it tells you who that ad's targeted to. And it was a Facebook ad, so they can really drill down on my personal, my account is who they're designing that to. They know where I live. They know the kind of things I click on, right? So they figure maybe this person voted for Barbara Comstock before, and we want to give them permission to vote for Wexton. And so that's where you have that at. But it's just hilarious. And also, by the way, I think remarkably efficient for the 8 or 9 seconds.
That's true. That was a 15-second ad, or maybe not even 15.
Oh, I don't think so.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean,
single-digit seconds.
I got to give the Wexton campaign credit for coming up with a clever catchphrase for her opponent. They call her Barbara Trumpstock.
Yeah.
As opposed to Bumpstock, which was in the news.
Barbara Bumpstock. Well, yeah.
Barbara Trumpstock. To tie her right to Donald Trump, who she renounced during the 2016 election. So, you know, you can't win for losing if you're Barbara Comstock. Let me put it this way, though. She's won every race she's ever been in. Most of them have been really close. But if she pulls this one out, it's a rabbit out
well,
of the
as
hat.
Tim and I both know, as somebody who's seen her on the ground, no one is going to outwork her.
That's
to,
for sure.
To get that seat. That's the metric of success, she'll win.
All right, now.
Let me get the second clip I have, just for laughs. I can't take credit for pulling this out of the air. I heard it on the Ben Shapiro podcast. I'll just tell you in advance, is this real or not? I don't know. I don't want to live in a world, though, where there's not at least one congressional candidate so tone deaf enough to run this ad, which is just great. Go ahead.
What will happen to our husbands, our fathers, or our sons when a white girl lies on them?
Girl, white Democrats will be lynching black folk again.
Honey, I've always told my son, don't be messing around with that. If you get caught, she will cry rape.
I'm voting to keep Congressman French Hill and the Republicans because we have to protect our men and boys. We can't afford to let white Democrats take us back to bad old days of race verdicts, life sentences, and lynchings when a white girl screams rape.
Oh, that's just, that is
I think it works on a dozen really different levels.
It does.
Okay? Like, first of all, like, factually, it's true in the sense of they were white Democrats who did that to black people in the South. But, of course, while that's true with their party label, perhaps ideologically, you know,
it's a little ridiculous.
I love the fact that it's likely to incur the wrath of blacks, especially, and just, you know, fair-minded people generally, and also that people who would yell about it have probably never given two black ladies a job, which is what the guy who produced this commercial did.
Indeed. All right, Scott. So, what's going to happen on Tuesday, nobody knows. It's likely the Republicans will keep the Senate. It's considered likely that Democrats will seize control of the House. But I thought it'd be interesting to listen to the closing arguments being made by the chairs of the Democrat and Republican national committees. This is Ronna McDaniel, who's actually related to, she's a cousin, I think, of Mitt Romney or a niece or mm-hmm. something. She's the head of the Republican National Committee, and she was asked about the House first, and then she goes on to give her summary of the election from the Republican standpoint.
It's neck and neck in about 21 races across the country, neck and neck. So it's going to depend on turnout. So what I am seeing in this early voting right now and the early absentee returns that we're seeing across the country is that we're hitting 2016 levels. Enthusiasm is high with Democrats, but Republicans are matching it. And I feel good about a lot of these battleground states that we are turning out our vote. So can we sustain that through Election Day? And we have the best closer in the business in President Trump making his case in all of these battleground states in the final waning days of this election. So we can keep the House, and I think we will keep the Senate and perhaps expand and gain seats, which is unprecedented in that first midterm of a first-term president.
Now, I think the key to that, Scott, is where she said that Republican enthusiasm has reached almost the same levels as with the Democrats in light of the Kavanaugh hearings, the immigration mm-hmm. stuff, and a bunch of other things.
I just think that President Trump hasn't shown himself to be a good campaigner for others. Where does the record exist that demonstrates
that?
Well,
we don't have one yet.
Well,
we won't know.
That's what she said. I mean, he's a great candidate as a candidate.
Well, he's a closer for himself. And
yeah.
It does beg the question about, in one way, he may be somewhat like Obama in the sense that they personally are appealing to the voters or a majority of them, but that popularity, personal popularity, doesn't translate mm-hmm. to others in the party. That's what we're going to find out this time. Now, from the Democrat standpoint, the chairman of the DNC.
I have to interrupt there and just say this, that it wasn't just that Obama's popularity, his popularity didn't extend to others. He engineered and designed a system like the Catholic Church where it all a pyramid system that
all goes back to him.
Letters to somebody else. I don't want to read them. But a pyramid system where it all filtered up into to accrue him. To Obama's benefit. So I don't think that we can actually even say that about him. The truth is actually more damning,
which is
that he benefited himself. Trump, has he tried to actually set up a real organization to go and help, you know?
He goes to rallies. That's his organization, he goes to rallies. But the Democrats, what the point I'm making about Obama is that, you know, he was elected in 2008. That was a wave. You know, all the stars aligned to elect him easily over John McCain. But in 2012, after some very shaky years as president, he still got reelected. But in that entire time from 2008 to 2016, and you could extend it to 18, Democrats took a beating, mm-hmm. an absolute beating in not just federal seats in Congress,
sure.
but also in state legislatures. They lost over 1,000 seats while Obama floated above it and got reelected in mm-hmm. 2012. So, I mean, what's at stake is that Trump could prove to be like that, where his personal appeal does not transfer to other candidates. But that's mm-hmm. one of the things we're going to find out. Now, from the Democrat standpoint, Tom Perez is the chairman of the DNC, and here is his sort of closing argument on the election.
They're hemorrhaging on the health care issue. Healthcare is the number one issue in this country. Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are right up there. They can't talk about those because they're on the wrong side. They want to cut Medicare. They want to cut Medicaid. They've voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act how many times? They don't care if you have a pre-existing condition. You're out of luck. And so they have to distract. They have to fear-monger. And his dog whistle of all dog whistles is immigration. This has been Donald Trump's playbook for so long. And you know what? When they go low, we go vote.
That was so
when
great.
When they go low, we go. It used to be, we have to go through the succession of things here.
It's literally the best thing you could ever do is to fear-monger. And then within the same breath, I think, did he even pause for a breath? Denigrate fear-mongering. So I'm going to, the key issues, the key third rail issues are Medicare, right? Pre-existing conditions. What are they going to do? Social Security?
Yeah, I mean, how ironic is it that the Democrats are trying to make health care an issue when Obamacare was the thing that devastated the party from top to bottom from 2010 on? People hated Obamacare. Now they think, I mean, maybe they're right. We'll find out Tuesday. They think they can now demonize the Republicans for health care problems because the Republicans didn't pass a full repeal of Obamacare.
So I've been listening closely to the messaging, too, and it's always and often only the pre-existing condition. That's the poll-tested thing that's going to scare these.
Right. Right.
Basically, the district where we live in midterm
and it's
voters.
Just not, and it's not true. I mean, the whole thing is it's completely false. Republicans are not going to take away protection.
Sadly, you're right. They're not going to take away all this socialized medicine off of our backs and let us be free. I agree. Would that they did. When I used to live in a small town, I used to go to the school board tax meetings when they decide the mill rate, you know, and want to raise taxes. And of course, I always resisted the attempt to steal more money from my neighbors. Mm-hmm. And like clockwork, they were very good at it. I mean, so many of these people are, and that's how they get their positions. But they would say, okay, we're going to meet in executive committee for a minute. We're going to come back to you with a budget that doesn't include these increases, right? And they'd come back and they'd be like, okay, we're going to eliminate daily school bus rides and also the football team. And you'd be like, it's like the two most important things right, that are like extra than the actual school teaching that most people care about, right?
Right.
So they knew that then that would rally everybody.
Everybody said, you can't do that.
Well,
wait a minute.
We tried to.
You said you were in favor of cutting the budget.
And that, to me, is like this. It's like the same idea. Like, oh, we have a bloated, horribly bloated budget. We have these defined benefit pension plans, Tim, throughout all levels of government that are going to really hobble us in the future to the extent they already haven't yet, which they're
Well, Social Security's running a net deficit now for the first, well, not 2016 was the first year. Yeah. It's now a net negative. Before we get to birthright citizenship, quickly, a couple of things to show you what CNN and MSNBC are doing with the issue of race. And this is not something I could even laugh at. Because it to me, it's frightening. First of all, here's Don Lemon.
We have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized to the right. And we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
This is on the most trusted name in news. He says, we've got to stop demonizing people. And then he immediately demonizes all white
men.
We're
not people. We are not people. Whether you're Maisie Hirono, the bigot, or Don Lemon, or the people he works with at CNN, you're not somebody who's any. You don't need to be considered. Your humanity does not need to be considered. And if there's one thing I'm getting from Don Lemon, from all those on the DNC and the lamestream media, those legacy media types, is there's two things that are most important in the world: your race / gender, sexual, whatever identity. And if that identity is the one that I happen to have, okay, then you're a piece of crap. Those two things are the messages that I keep getting over and over again.
But they're inciting. I mean, they're literally, it's like they're trying to incite a race war. But that was just on CNN. Mm-hmm. Listen to MSNBC and this highfalutin faculty lounge Marxist or neo-Marxist professor, black professor at Princeton, Eddie Gaud. Listen to what he said.
It's Dr. Gaud.
What I did wrong in 2016 is I overestimated white people. I didn't think white people would put him in office.
Drunk.
So here he is running around the country, appealing to our darker angels, appealing to our hatreds and fears. Some ideal of whiteness that Donald Trump represents and spews out of his mouth every single day.
What's that gentleman's name again?
Eddie Gaud.
Well, Dr. Gaud, Tim, I have to say that he says darker angels. Excuse me. Does he mean that? Is he equating that color to mean
He may be a racist black guy, racist against black people.
This is
as
how
a
endemic the racism is at
But
at
I mean,
Princeton.
this is you know, we laugh about it because it seems laughable. But, you know, the people that are talking about
the race
possible advent
come.
Of a second civil war, this is not funny stuff. This is on MSNBC. Okay, you can understand to the extent that they're a left-wing outlet. Everybody knows it. But on CNN, in prime time, here's a guy saying we need to do a ban on white people. I mean, there's Don Lemon saying that. This is frightening stuff.
I think that we may be past the tipping point with how things are going before we see violence in the streets, and I mean it to be true.
We've already seen some of it.
By the way, that laugh is not a laugh of thinking this is funny. It's a laugh of resigned, like throwing up your hands. Like, this is where I would see the world. I would say if I had grandchildren, I would think that they'll certainly see that world. If things continue on the course without some massive correction, which, hey, there's reason for hope. There are many causes in the United States and abroad where, you know, liberty is advancing. The global poverty rate, if you look at that, is really encouraging. Now, it can be discouraging to realize how many truly destitutely poor people there are in the world. But if you look at where they've come in the last 50 years and the pace of technology and all that, there's cause for hope generally, too. So,
but I mean, the phrase toxic masculinity, but more so toxic whiteness, the demonization of someone because they're white, is something we've never witnessed before the last couple of years. I mean, they've been talked, there's always been racists among blacks as there have among whites. But now it's becoming almost,
well, that
I don't know if I
that,
say widespread would be the word, but it's getting frighteningly widespread on the left.
I think it's widespread. And just actually your statement there, I think many would disagree with you that that's even possible. They don't even believe that a black person can be racist.
Because they don't have the power, so therefore racism is an assertion of power.
It's a conflation. It actually is changing the word racism to just mean whatever you want it to mean. And often what it means is something that a white person did that makes a non-white person not feel great about the situation.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
Let's get to birthright citizenship.
Which is going
to
get more racism coming up right here, birthright citizenship.
Right.
Donald Trump said this week, you want to play the campaign rally clip or the Axios clip? What's your preference on that?
I'll play the Axios,
okay,
the
so
interview of the
he
president.
Gave this, he gave this interview to Axios, and he talked about basically what he wants to do with birthright citizenship, which again is you're born in the United States, literally on, you know, in a hospital that's located in the United States, you're a U.S. citizen. Here's the president.
On immigration, some legal scholars believe you can get rid of birthright citizenship without changing the Constitution.
Executive order.
Exactly.
Right.
Have you thought about that?
Yes.
Tell me more.
It was always told to me that you needed a constitutional amendment.
Right. 14th Amendment.
You don't. Number one, you don't need that. Number two,
I mean, that's in dispute.
You could definitely
that's very much in dispute.
Well, you can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
Have you talked about that with counsel?
Yeah. I have.
So where in the process?
It's in the process. It'll happen. With an executive order. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly
a very interesting
question.
I didn't think anybody knew that but me. I thought I was the only one. Jonathan,
I've got a good guess.
Let me get a couple of points. First of all, the last point first is, do you see how he manipulates the reporter at the end and say, like, basically, like, complimenting
job,
him
Jonathan,
for being... It's
yes.
funny, right? It's sort of how he does his... applies his trade. Yes. I thought it was an interesting thing. But I also thought it was funny where he's like, you've gone over this with counsel. Who the hell do you think told him that they could get away with changing this law? It wasn't Trump. It was like,
well, he could have been trolling Twitter late at night.
Why do we have to make
morning?
All these people citizens, you know?
So the whole thing revolved around those five words in the middle of the 14th Amendment.
Can you read the section, please? And when you call it up, I'll say an interesting fact that I discovered when I was doing – I had a written piece on this for LibertyNation.com, which I appreciated your compliment on. I think it laid out the –
yeah, I think it was a fair treatment of the issue.
What I learned is that there have been some serious busts on this for Chinese nationals who want U.S. citizenship for their offspring. And so these are people who are not, unlike the Central American, the sort of typical caravan types from Central America. These are people with significant means, and they'll actually come over in the second trimester and overstay their visas, and they'll actually work with agencies to kind of help facilitate this anchor baby thing. So go ahead, please.
Well, that's the whole point about it is that it's a very powerful, some would say almost an electromagnetic force drawing illegal immigrants here, figuring, and you know what? You can't blame the immigrants were trying to have a better life. If they can
blame them
somehow
for being good parents.
If they can somehow get here and their kid can at least be a citizen, even if they can,
you can't
blame them. It's not their fault.
I'm sure that your ancestors got some kind of official warrant from the king before they come over. But for some of us, those origins are.
I don't believe there was a king of Germany in 1860.
See, that's what I'm saying.
When
My point is just that I don't know that of all my Elizabeth Warren-level ancestors came here legally, you know? I presume that there may be one or more that haven't. And
back to the Pocahontas fiasco.
Yeah, and, this is just another good reason why it's better to not get involved in the business of having such strong prohibitions against people coming here. I was saying to you outside, I first started to say this sentence and I stopped myself because I said, this is now an unrecorded podcast. Let's wait until we got into the studio. And what I wanted to say was, what I think they could do, and this would be like a Republican Party Protection Act kind of, is say that you can come, but try to get some kind of change in citizenship laws whereby these people basically can never become citizens of the United States, so that they don't have the power to vote. Let them become permanent national residents,
just automatically.
Okay.
I mean, they're coming in as refugees seeking a sanctuary here, so they have to go through a process.
I think that's probably a legal beard that they're using in order to come here to just be here for the many reasons why they want to be here.
Right.
Probably not true for most of them. That they are refugees.
But they have been presented as refugees. The left is presenting them nonstop as not as immigrants, but as refugees, so they can establish refugee status and therefore cite the UN Council, the various
Charter
UN Councils. And then there's the 1952 Immigration and Naturalization Act, which says that the president can exclude any person or group of persons that he feels like, essentially, because he's the president. But here's the thing with those five words, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which are the heart of the argument, the interpretation of
Did
those
you read
words.
It? Go ahead and read it.
I will read it. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside.
Now, that's the first section of the 14th Amendment,
right.
A Reconstruction Amendment passed in the immediate wake of the Civil War in order to basically fully integrate blacks into the lives of Americans, legally speaking. So that's why it mentions the state they live in. So there, Georgia couldn't say, for instance, they're not citizens of Georgia. You know, they may be U.S. citizens, but they can't vote here or enjoy legal rights here. So it wasn't contemplated. Now, my argument that we've talked about on the Liberty Nation radio program was that the language there excluding certain people was designed to exclude U.S. ambassadors and envoy and other staff from foreign jurisdictions that were here in an official capacity and not anybody who just came over because they want to be here. And it's because there was no such thing as an illegal immigrant there was no such thing in 1866 as an illegal immigrant like there is in 2018.
It seems like this is being looked at in too much of a vacuum. The language of the 14th Amendment by itself being parsed Whereas what it should be looked at as is one of a series of three Reconstruction amendments, which you mentioned, the 13th outlawing slavery, the 14th Amendment, which we just discussed, and the 15th, which cannot deny any citizen a right to vote, no matter race, creed, or color, or previous condition of servitude is the actual word. So it's obvious that these three amendments, which were passed in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, were designed specifically to free blacks from slavery,
yes,
to give them citizenship, and to grant them the right to vote. If you're an originalist, as opposed to a textualist, and I know we can parse the difference, mm-hmm, but if you're an originalist, you're looking at what the meaning of the text was at the time it was written. So how is this then applicable to a class of people not even contemplated at that time?
It's easy. If it wasn't contemplated at the time, then we have to apply the plain meaning of the words at the time that the amendment was adopted to the new circumstance that we have. The new circumstance is that Congress has created this category of people called illegal aliens. And how are we going to deal with those, the offspring of those people? Well, we have to apply the law as written. The law wasn't, those people weren't contemplated at the time of the drafting of the amendment. So I say, if in fact the Supreme Court rules, and this will be a Supreme Court decision, if it in fact rules that that's how we should read the amendment today, then I think you have to dial it back and say that those offspring are included and we need to change. Look, I understand that it's really hard to change a constitutional amendment. We don't do it very often. But that doesn't mean in many instances to give the people what they want in terms of a solution to a problem may require changing an amendment. And
it may only involve the Congress, which has no appetite to do it. Let's say
right.
that. But it does give the Congress the power to define who is subject and not subject to the jurisdiction,
yes,
which would then clarify that language in the 14th Amendment fully and finally.
Fully and finally is an interesting
subject
question.
Subject to further congressional action. Right?
I read Senator statement from 1866, who said that the amendment itself defined fully and finally to him once and for all, I think is what he may have used.
And
not once and for all. We're talking about it still today.
But that was useful because it establishes, and if you look back at the senator that got the ball rolling on the 14th Amendment and who was considered the driving force behind it, he said it had pretty much fully and finally fixed the issue of black slavery and citizenship. That's what it did. So
one of them said it just fixed the issue of who was a citizen, and that was the point I was making. Obviously, it didn't. So when you say through legislation, many a legislator, Tim, has thought they fixed an issue fully and finally, and then when it was examined by the lawyers and picked it apart, guess what? It actually opened up a can of worms. So I don't know that there is, absent a constitutional amendment, I don't know that there's a quick fix on this. And I will say this in terms about Congress and the legislative solution, and this hasn't been addressed by the president that I know of. Congress has already acted in this area. There's a law on the books, a federal law, that codifies the 14th Amendment. Basically, it's the same words of the 14th Amendment passed into federal law. Congress declares such and such and so and so.
But that still doesn't clarify subject to the jurisdiction thereof, but unless they define who specifically is and is not
right.
subject to
such jurisdiction. But that's a different analysis than – but they don't give the president power via the executive to change that law or make a ruling. So if the courts were to rule – that they don't know who is subject to, they would then have to turn to the Congress for clarification on that. The president doesn't get to decide
right.
what Congress meant.
Right.
Congress decides what Congress meant. The courts will rule if they can determine or discern that intent, but if they can't, they'll send it back and ask for.
Well, it's possible that Donald Trump will take an executive action, will pass an executive order and challenge the courts to overturn him.
Well, he's not person who has shied away from actions that are going to be challenged in court later on, that's for sure. And, you know, if he thinks it's going to help in the congressional elections, then I expect we'll see it. In fact, maybe he's going to have his cake and eat it too now, which is to talk about it, not actually have to do it.
Well, he certainly won't do it before the elections, which are coming up Tuesday. So I think that's about all the fun we're allowed to have.
Thanks so much for listening, for watching. Please tell a friend. The Uprising is the podcast of LibertyNation.com. And we appreciate you stopping by and spending time with us. Please like and subscribe.
Ciao.
Ciao.